This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
We play like that all game, then we maybe have a different result. So a case of too little, too late. And then, you know, you clinch a spot last night, and these guys are obviously very hungry to get into the playoffs. I think that played a part in it at the beginning of the game. So we needed to wake up, and we did. It tied the game, and, you know, tough to see them get one right back.
I mean, probably a lot of guys counted us out there right around Christmas time, and, you know, we knew we had it in us, and we proved once again that we're a great team, and we have a lot of talent, and, you know, we had some new guys coming in, and they got more acclimated to the way we wanted to play, and did some tweaks in our system that worked our way, and great goaltending, and that's a combination of everything, everyone taking another step, and obviously Cooch leading the way.
Every fan wants to go 82-0, and it's such a grind this regular season. You know, we're in a, you know, battling for a playoff spot, and we've basically played three games in less than 4 days. And it's hard. It's hard for these guys. And the margin of error and, or, you know, win losses between the teams and the talent levels, it's minute.
It's minute. Boy, do things change. There's no question about that. Just take a look at the Eastern Conference standings right now. That fight for the wild card, wow, it changes every day. The Lightning saw Pittsburgh over the weekend. That was a entertaining game. One that I felt like the Lightning maybe had that game, got another 5-10 minutes, was going to win. They didn't, but we'll talk about the game against Pittsburgh, the Eastern Conference standings, where things are right now, and of course, taking your questions at Bolts Radio on X. We are pre-taping just to give you guys a heads up. Dave Mishkin on that side. Steve Versnick's our producer. I am Greg Linnelli. Partner, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. We are pre-taping because I'm in a remote location. I did a morning show today.
Was it a TV?
Channel 10, show? Great Day Live. And so they were gracious enough to let me go into one of their conference rooms. And
that's,
I'm sitting
cool
in a quiet office. Very quiet. This is eerily quiet. This is quieter than even when I do it at home and the animals are milling about, or
we need
there's
like
the train
cars
going by.
Yeah, the train. Can we do a sound effect? Can we get a train going?
Just I know.
How was the TV?
Well,
was
television studios tend to have pretty airtight rooms.
Yeah, they do.
I think.
Yeah. You like TV?
No, well, yeah, I promoted the book, but we talked a little Lightning too.
Nice.
So, you know, years ago, and I'm saying years ago, I think it was 2018. They had an open host position on Great Day Live, which is Channel 10, CBS affiliate. And they asked me to guest host.
Really?
So they had two hosts, a man and a woman. I believe the man was Michael Clayton, the former Bucks receiver. So they parted ways. They needed to fill an opening. I think they were looking.
And they thought of you?
Sure. Well, they needed people to kind of fill in while they were doing their search. So they asked me to come in, and I co-hosted an episode with Kendall, who was the female co-host at that time. She was from Texas. I think she went back to Texas subsequently. She's not on the show anymore. And it went so well, they had me come back and do two more. I remember It was the beginning of the season. I want to say it was the 18-19 season. So it was like fall of 2018. And then clearly they realized that this was a Band-Aid solution at best. So they ended up bringing in Java, who is still on the show. And then when Kendall moved on, they brought in Janelle. So I was on with Java and Janelle this morning. And we got to talk about Blind Squirrel and a little bit about the Lightning. But, you know, people who listen to our show, people who follow me on X, like, they are probably tired of hearing about the book. But there is a wide, very, very wide range of people / an audience that is well outside my reach, right, and our reach on the show. So it's important that I go on different media out.
I think a good book's a good book. You cover a lot of ground.
I understand that, but yeah, a lot of people haven't heard about it, Greg, who don't listen to Power Lunch or don't really know the Lightning or aren't following me on social media.
Did you plug our show? That's the most important thing.
I you know, TV, there's just not enough time. I was like, you know, if you are interested in some great hockey talk, it's not going to interfere with the audience on Great Day Live, which is 9 to 10. You can tune in from 12 to 1.
Why wouldn't you? Well, you know what? We may gain a few listeners, though. You just never know.
Anyway, I am in the quiet confines of the Channel 10 studios. Happy to be joining you today. And yes, that turned into a barn burner of a game in the third period. And you're right. Maybe if the game had lasted another 5 minutes, which it didn't, the Lightning might have found a way to get a point out of that game. The game mattered so much more to the Penguins than it did to the Lightning. I think that was reflected certainly in the first period and to an extent in the second period. And look, I give the Lightning credit. I do. I mean, they didn't play very well in the first two periods, so I'm not giving them credit for that. But that would have been a pretty easy game after two periods to say, all right, let's just go home. We got our playoff spot. Let's play out the third period. As Coop said, it was three games in 4 nights and even less than that because the final game was played on Saturday afternoon. There was a lot of travel in there as well. They were facing a determined team that was desperate for points, much like they have been for the last month. They clinched a playoff spot on Friday night. It was normal to have them exhale. And you know what? They didn't take that approach. They came out and they went for it. They scored in the opening shift of the third, and they basically controlled the puck for the entire 20 minutes with a couple of exceptions. Malkin hits the post on one that he probably finishes 99 times out of 100, and later Riley Smith hit the crossbar. So the Penguins basically had two passes at the Lightning net before the bunting goal, almost scored twice, and then they get the goal to break the tie, go up 5-4, but goodness gracious, that third period. Penguins did a really good job of blocking shots. Jack St. Ivany at the end of the game was credited with three consecutive shot blocks when the Lightning had a 6-on-4. And they changed the shots, of course. But in the third period, at the end of all the corrections, shots were 12-4 Lightning. That doesn't even begin to tell the story of how much the Lightning dominated possession in the third period. I had shot attempts before they probably changed them at 33-8 Lightning. 33-8.
Yeah, right.
And the Lightning were very dangerous even in the earlier parts of the game in the power play. The Penguins broadcasters I ran into during the intermission, I ran into Steve Mears in the hallway, mm-hmm. and he was shaking his head. He's like, how is that power play not higher than 29%, basically? And I'm like, well, look, they've been zipping it around today. And through two periods, that was really the only highlight the Lightning had of their 22 shots through two periods, 9 were on the power play. And they had a goal and they had an almost goal on their second power play chance.
Right.
But their 5-on-5 play picked up in the third. They scored another power play goal in the third. And then they got the 6-on-4 with whatever it was, a minute 34 left. And they applied heavy, heavy pressure. But I believe they were only credited with one shot on net. How is that possible? It was possible because the Penguins blocked a lot of shots. And this young defenseman, St. Ivany, a Yale guy, I'll point out, although he didn't finish there. He was at Yale when COVID hit, and then he transferred to BC. But he's in the NHL. Like, he may have saved the Penguins a point there.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if the Penguins go to overtime and they win anyway, it doesn't really matter to them. I think they're actually in pretty good shape relating to the tie break as it stands. They are.
If they win out, they just need points. Yeah.
Yeah. They just need points. But nonetheless, they could have lost the game in overtime or the shootout. So look, this defenseman who hadn't been with them most of the year comes up with three key shot blocks in the closing minute of the game with his team down two men because it's a 6-on-4.
We had talked a little bit. I had mentioned they have like three new young defensemen that they're breaking in. P.O. Joseph's not new. He's a young defenseman who I think is gaining a little more confidence. I think Shea was the other defenseman who they're putting in the lineup to see if they can keep riding this hot wave. But Dave, getting back to your point, I mean, Pittsburgh, their MO basically a lot this year has been jump out to a lead. The other team just bounces back and they go to overtime, and they have a lot of bad overtime losses. So that's why I kept saying if there was probably like another 5 minutes, I don't know. I mean, I feel like the momentum was there for the Lightning. And I agree with you. I think those are tough games to play. I mean, I think you get up for them. I think if you lose them, you're not upset about it. Pittsburgh mm-hmm. needed that game way more than Tampa Bay did. And Tampa Bay found out Friday night, right? That they had
yeah.
Not that there's a letdown, but I think you can breathe a little bit.
Boy, the Capitals and the Flyers are just sinking like anchors. Oh, no. I mean, points-wise, they're not. They're still in the mix. But the Caps have only 3 wins in their last 10, and the Flyers have only 2 wins in their last 10. They've gotten some overtime points in there, but that is tough. On the other hand, the Islanders and Penguins both have won 6 of their last 10.
Yeah.
And even Detroit, like Detroit has managed 4 wins. I'm looking at their last 10, 4-4-2 in their last 10.
They're hanging in there. The Islanders and Penguins have kind of those teams jockeying for position of, I don't want to say righted the ship a little bit, but they're moving in the right direction.
Yes.
The Flyers are sinking. I mean, it's been, you know, Buffalo, I think, is more on the outside looking in, but they're kind of...
They lost a key game yesterday to Detroit. Yeah,
they did. And Detroit probably, you know, looked at that as a must-win game, sure, if you need that in some capacity. At Bolts Radio, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you certainly can. So I'm curious what your take is on Pittsburgh, because I don't think that's a playoff team, but they're playing well at the right time.
Look, they look great in the first 2 periods. I mean, they really did.
You like Bunting with Malkin?
Yeah. I mean, look.
Give him a little juice.
That was their most productive line. I mean, Malkin had 2 goals and Bunting had 1.
Probably could have had 5, right?
Yeah. Like, and then Malkin hit the post,
yeah,
like
right.
You said, on a slam dunker. So, look, it may just be that they're hitting their stride at the right time. I mean, all of this talk about how bad they've been defensively. But I mean, I guess that hasn't been the only talk, but really it's been Carlson hasn't played.
The power play stinks.
Right? Like, it struggled. You know, Brian had an interesting point. Brian Engblom did the game with me. So the Rangers have a very effective power play.
Yeah.
And their top power play is a handful. But the way they work their power play, there's constant movement. Like, where is Panarin? Is Panarin on his offside? Is it the left circle? Sometimes he goes to the right circle. Fox is walking that blue line. Like, who plays the left circle for the Rangers? Is it Panarin or is it Zibanejad?
Right.
Like, they have motion to their power play. The Penguins have one guy who is moving, Malkin. And that was what Brian noted. He's like, Malkin is moving around. He wants to dance around the offensive zone. But it's like the other 4 players are not in sync with him moving around. That was his diagnosis and, you know, whatever they were, 0-for-2 on the power play.
The issue is that Malkin wants to be in the right circle. Crosby probably should be there. Like, kind of like Cooch.
But if he goes there, why doesn't he stay there?
I don't know how many games Brian has watched of Pittsburgh. Typically, Malkin does. Now, maybe in recent games he's been moving around a little bit, but it's typically get that one-timer Malkin and let him rip. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, they might be trying to do some different things because that power play has been awful, and maybe the way they're doing that is to have Malkin move around. What I'm telling you is I think there needs to be a discussion to have Crosby kind of be on that side, because I think, like Cooch, I think the power play needs to run through him. But that's my observation.
Well, look, if you're asking me for my assessment of the Penguins, not only are they playing well at the right time and they've caught a break that some of the teams that were ahead of them have slumped, they've had a number of quality wins recently. We're talking about at Rangers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say they always struggle at Devils. They went to New Jersey and rallied from 3-1 down. That was a game where the shoe was on the other foot, right? They rallied from a deficit. They beat the Lightning at home. Now, I understand the Lightning didn't have as much to play for, but it still would be viewed as a quality win. So I think if they get in, they will have earned it. And you want to be playing well. It was what we've asked so many people. You don't have to be going like 8-1 going into the playoffs, but you at least want your game to be trending in the right direction, right?
Right.
You don't want to have all of these holes, you know, leaks that you have to plug, right, going into the playoffs. And right now it looks like the Penguins don't have as many issues that they have to fix, but they still have work to do. As I'm looking at the standings today, they're 9th.
Well, and their schedule, I think, is hard.
But they've had quality wins so far.
They have, but part of being, you know, where the Penguins are, they're inconsistent. I mean, you know, could they win the next five? Yeah. Could they lose the next five? Sure.
I mean, Islanders have the Rangers twice. I know that.
They do. The Pittsburgh plays the Islanders the last game of the year. I think.
Yeah.
I think Pittsburgh has Boston, Nashville, Toronto. I can't remember the other team. Might even be the Rangers. Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's all like really good teams. I mean, if they get in, they will have earned it from that perspective. But I did like the Lightning's pushback. Chief was really annoyed by the Lightning's effort. And I think sometimes Chief, he gets caught up in the game-to-game aspect sometimes. And, mm-hmm. you know, I know he wants them to be playing a certain way. I think we all do. But I think we also know it's not the end of the world, you know, if the Lightning, for whatever reason, aren't playing as well at times towards the end of the year based off of their track record in the playoffs.
Well, this one game, game 77 for the Lightning, is not going to be an indicator for playoff success or lack thereof. I think it was a positive sign that when they really had nothing to play for except pride, they came out in the third period and made the Penguins extremely uncomfortable. And as I look at the standings right now, Greg, it's not locked in. But it certainly appears that the Lightning are going to be wild card one. I mean, they have a chance to catch Toronto for third, but they're probably going to need to win the final game of the regular season against Toronto in mm-hmm. regulation, and they may need a little bit of help along the way. They're 4 points back, and Toronto has an extra game. So if the Lightning are wild card one, what does that mean? Right now, it's looking like Boston. Boston is 3 points behind the Rangers, same number of games played, for first overall. So second overall, basically, or the top team in the division that is the second seed gets the first wild card. Right now, that would be Boston. And by virtue of their overtime win over the Panthers, the Bruins have a 5-point lead over Florida. So you have said you would actually like to see Boston in the first round.
That is correct.
I've been noncommittal about it. But right now, the winds are blowing in that direction. Understanding, you know, there's still for teams 4 or 5 games left, and we can see some movement. Certainly possible. The Bruins could catch the Rangers. I mean, you talked about Pittsburgh and the Islanders playing the Rangers. The Rangers are playing teams that have a lot to play for, right? So they may absorb a regulation loss or two, and the Bruins might slip past them. And it's possible. I think it's less likely for the Lightning to fall to wild card two at this point. In fact, I think they only need a point. Steve can correct me if I'm wrong. I think they only need a point, and they will have clinched no worse than the first wild card. But there's still a chance they could move into third. So I'm not willing to say right now it's going to be Bruins-Lightning in the first round, but it's probably more likely to be Bruins Lightning than Lightning versus any of the other teams.
You're right, Dave. It's just 1 point to clinch the at worst, the first wild card.
I like that matchup. I'm not telling you it's a slam dunk. I think it is important matchup-wise in any series, and I think especially with this Lightning team, who we both agree, a lot better depth-wise to handle any opponent. But if you can give me an opponent who I'd like to face that I'd feel like, okay, I think the Lightning can do some things, I think it would mm-hmm. be Boston. For the various reasons we've talked about Boston, they're good, but there are some questions, you know, and I think the biggest question becomes in net. Basil wanted to know if I was at the game, by the way, in Pittsburgh. No, I was not, Basil.
Leaving little baby Enzo? What kind of dad do you think he is?
I can't Basil. Leave him. He would have to come with me. Yeah. That's how that would probably probably transpire.
I had to laugh, though. You texted me after the second period. Like, my dad said, this is as good as the Penguins have looked all year. Like, of course, against the Lightning.
That's
Penguins
right.
are now 16-3-1 at PPG Paints Arena in the regular season.
Well, and I told you, too, I texted you. Malkin's family
yes.
is back watching him for the first time in a few years.
Yeah, they showed them on the scoreboard.
That's a big deal. I mean, obviously, that's an X-factor.
He was extremely pumped to score his first goal. I'm like, he's pretty excited to score a goal here. And then it kind of made sense.
It's been a shaky year for him. I mean, look, he's a first
25 goals Hall of Famer. Though now.
I know. And at 37, that's pretty good production. I mean, Dave, how many, you know, 37, 38, not everybody's going to be Sidney Crosby hitting 40 goals. I thought he might have been the best player on the ice for at least a couple of periods. I mean, that one deflection he had that hit the crossbar.
You're talking about Crosby.
Crosby, correct.
Yeah, that was incredible.
I mean, he was just, you know. It's funny. I saw some chatter after the game.
If the Penguins get in, we're going to have to start seeing some heart votes go to Sid.
I agree with that, though. Well, but yeah, I've said that.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about that for a little bit. You know,
saying they're following our lead.
Yeah, they're following our lead. I'm like, yeah, they're going to, for sure. I mean, he's not going to win it.
He should get votes.
He should. Kucherov should win it. Again, and Kucherov and Crosby, not the same player, maybe not even the dead-on set example. Expectations were very low for Pittsburgh. And I think expectations were low, and I don't think they should have been for the Lightning coming in this year. And Kucherov
were
having
expectations
the year
low for Pittsburgh, though. Really?
I mean, I didn't
they
have
acquired
the
Carlson.
Team. That's all
they
you
have
need
the
to
new
know.
GM. I mean, I understand their core was the same and getting older and older and older, but I don't know. I think there were questions. Like,
I didn't
would
think
Pittsburgh
they were playoff
rebound
team.
After missing the playoffs last.
I
year?
I didn't think they were a playoff team. I mean, I told you that between Pittsburgh and Washington, I
you
felt like those
that.
Are two
yes.
teams that, and I said Pittsburgh gets into the playoffs if they have top 10 in their special teams. I mean, and their power play, they still may get in, but their power play has been atrocious. I mean, that's just brutal.
But that's as I've said, Greg, I mean, look, you'd like your power play not to be brutal because your power play can help you. I'm talking about in the playoffs. I think you can win a series with a bad power play. But you need your penalty kill to be very good. Now, the Penguins' penalty kill had a lot of problems with the Lightning power play on Saturday. But overall this year, the Penguins' penalty kill has been pretty good. I mean, they came in 10th in the NHL. I think the way their lineup is constructed, and what I mean by that is, like, what they've done as a team this year, the areas where they have struggled may not hurt them as much in a playoff series. Like you said, they haven't done well in overtime. Well, you know, in overtime, it's not going to go to the shootout, right? They've lost 11 games in overtime of the shootout. In the playoffs, it's next goal wins. They still have for a while there, they were minus, but they're back on the plus side of goal differential, which is better than a lot of other teams that are in the mix with them. Islanders are minus 23.
Incredible.
They have game breakers. And yeah, their power play has been terrible, but I know I mentioned this example before. Look at the 2011 Boston Bruins, who won the Stanley Cup with a horrendous power play percentage.
Good point.
It
can be done.
Now, they are going to be seeing either, if they can get into third, probably Carolina, a very good team, or second wild card, probably the Rangers. Very good team, and a lot of history there.
It's a good point.
Penguins were... Didn't the Rangers score a sixth... Was it a sixth attacker goal the year that Panarin won the series in overtime? I'm trying to remember. They scored late. The Rangers scored late to tie up game 7, and the Penguins had a 3-1 lead in that series.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. At Bolts Radio.
I can't remember. It was late. I'm not sure if it was the sixth attacker goal, but I mean, the Penguins were within a whisker of winning that series. And sometimes, you know, when there's like white hot rivalry type history between two franchises, that changes the dynamic of the gap.
Yeah.
In point total. So look, I'm a little rosier on the Penguins maybe than you are if they get into the playoffs. We'll see.
We will see. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio.
Great for the league, though, that these last 2 weeks of the regular season,
there is
at least in the East, there is a very, very compelling storyline about who will get these last two spots.
Yep.
Third in the Metro and the second wild card.
Yep. There is intrigue. There's no doubt about it. You've got 5 or 6 teams that are realistically have an opportunity. The league, they tout the parity. Everybody's got an opportunity. And if you buy it and you like hockey, you're watching these games at the end of the regular season that have meaning mm-hmm. and you're interested. And so I think that is interesting for sure. And you've got a couple of old guards who are still fighting to be relevant. And you've got a couple of new teams when I say new teams, teams that, you know,
well, Detroit is rejoining the conversation.
And Philadelphia.
Look, right? I'm looking at their schedule. So you were wondering, who are they playing? At Toronto, this is a Penguins schedule.
Yeah.
At Toronto tonight, home Detroit. That's a huge game.
Huge game.
Home Boston, home Nashville, at Islanders.
I mean, that's a brutal schedule. Would you agree?
It's laid out for them, though. If they beat the Red Wings and the Islanders, they have a very good chance. Just those two games alone. They win those two games, they're going to have a very good chance of getting
in. I think they still get in if they're 4-1 during that. But you got to beat Detroit and you got to beat the Islanders. I think those are must-win games.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's kind of how it all is going to play out. What else did you take from the Pittsburgh game? Or do you want to move on and kind of look ahead? Any individual performances you're looking at here, partner, that continues
Stamkos
to stand
continues
up?
To I mean, blast he does. Away. Yeah.
He does.
How many shots did he have? Let's see.
It was over six.
Seven shots on net. Now, well, hold on. This is the printed version. Let me check the other version. This is the online version. Seven shots on net and 11 shot attempts. And a lot of those came on the power play or on the six. Well, they were power play. Six on four or the five on four. And he scored two goals. Interestingly, his line was -3. But he definitely was productive offensively. And Cooch has gained a little separation
about
now
that,
in the scoring title. I mean, that's not really like a notable performance per se in the last game, but just generally he went from, again, like getting 1 point a game to all of a sudden getting 3 points a game,
right? Which is what
on
he
this
can
road
do.
Trip. Yeah. So he's at 136, McKinnon's at 133, McDavid's at 130. But when you look at the games remaining, Colorado only has four games remaining. So McKinnon has four games left. Cooch has five with a 3-point lead. And Edmonton has an extra game. So McDavid is 6 points behind Cooch with six games remaining. Unless these teams decide to rest these guys, which I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, Colorado has to worry about losing home ice in the first round.
Yeah.
They're second. And Winnipeg is 2 points back with a game in hand. And the advantage in the tiebreaker. Maybe it doesn't matter to Colorado, but I don't know. If you're in that 2-3 matchup, I think you'd like to get home ice, no?
For sure. That's a competitive West, especially the top teams. And I actually think in Colorado, home ice advantage means something.
Yeah, I agree.
I actually think it actually means something for them. So
Edmonton has still a chance to catch Vancouver for first, which is interesting.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Do you think Edmonton has more questions for a team that is as good as they are record, you know, for their regular season record? You know, we talk about, like, what do they have?
They're always going to have, they're always going to have questions because they have arguably the best player in the league on their team.
That is true.
But they have, with that best player in the league, they've never gotten to a Stanley Cup final. And it's not like he's the best player in the league playing in his third season. Connor McDavid entered
he's
the
been in there a lot,
in
right?
2015.
Yeah.
Now, the team has gotten better since he's been there, but they have not gotten to where I think it's fair to expect that when you have Connor McDavid on your team, and it's not just him, Leon Draisaitl, Zach Hyman has over 50 goals, but even before this year, he's been a very productive player. Nugent Hopkins, a number one overall pick. They have a lot of high and players on their team, but they also have, and I'm going to say this because I think this is the perception, while there are a lot of unbelievably talented players in the NHL, the perception is that Connor McDavid is the best player in the NHL, at least offensively. And it's hard to argue that based on his point production throughout his career. If you have that guy, how is it that you haven't gone deeper in the playoffs so far? Those are the questions.
That's fair.
And they're going to hang over McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers until they get to the promised land.
Yeah.
Even if they get to the Stanley Cup final this year and lose, those questions are not going to go away. Because the other top guys, you can go down the list in the history of the league. Generally, if you are considered the best player in the NHL, you have won the Stanley Cup at least once.
That is all fair.
Gretzky, Lemieux, Orr, Phil, Crosby,
Ovechkin,
and until he won it, those questions were hounding him.
Because I think when you're the elites of the elites, you know, you're kind of picking hairs a little bit. Who's better? to some extent, individually.
Yeah.
People want to see how you separate yourself from a team perspective.
Right.
So I think that's just kind of where things
are. Yzerman had to deal with those questions. I'm not sure that Yzerman was ever considered the best player in the NHL, but he was certainly considered one of the best players in the NHL.
Yeah, for sure.
And
for
all those years, Detroit didn't get there. They'd go deep. They'd lose. They get to the final. They lose. Sometimes they go out in the first round. And it's like when Yzerman finally recognized that he needed to back off his offensive production and be, I mean, I'm kind of simplifying it here, and I wasn't there, so I'm going off kind of second, third, fourth hand hearsay here. Basically, Yzerman said, I'm going to D up, and it may affect my offensive numbers, but it's in the best interest of the team. That's when the Red Wings started winning cups. And that's when Yzerman's name was etched in history as one of the all-time greats. All-time great players, all-time great captains, all-time great leaders. McDavid doesn't have that.
No. And rightfully or wrongly, you know, it's always one of those things where...
Exactly. It's not an individual sport.
No, it's not. It's he's only on the ice so many minutes.
But you asked about questions about Edmonton.
Yeah.
Those are the questions.
Sure. For sure.
I think they have a very good head coach, though, Greg. I mean,
I would agree
with
that. I've
been thinking long and hard about not putting Chris Knobloch in my top three, and I've wavered. Yeah. This is going to be one of the hardest years, I have to be honest with you, because maybe a month ago I was like, yeah, I'm leaning toward these three guys, and I may have to revise that. If Edmonton finishes in first place, understanding where they were when Knobloch took over, I understand he didn't have the whole year. And that, to me, works against him because other coaches were there the whole year. But the turnaround has been staggering in Edmonton.
It's a good point. It has been. It's to the point where I think a lot of people were looking at it and saying, you know, is Edmonton a favorite to win this year? And I think those are all valid, playing well at the right time, best player in the world. You can make a case Leon Draisaitl. Is he the second best player on the planet? I mean, we don't talk enough about him probably, right? I mean, geez, the guy's phenomenal, and he's picking up points left and right. So I think it's something, obviously, to look at moving forward.
For what it's worth, I know that – so this isn't the Ted Lindsay Award, which is voted on top player by the players. I don't think Draisaitl's ever won that. But the players have been polled on different categories, and I want to say that Draisaitl has been voted among his peers, and that carries a lot of weight, I think, as the best passer in the NHL.
I've heard that, yeah.
And I mean, you've got Cooch, right? Like, if they did that poll right now this year, Cooch might win it. But, like, that's where players around the league view Draisaitl. He's not just like Robin to McDavid's Batman, right? Like, he's a tremendous player in his own right.
For sure. I wanted to ask you something, bringing it back to the Lightning a bit. And it does go back to what Brian Engblom said on the broadcast with you against Pittsburgh. Did you get the sense he's still kind of up in the air about the fit for Dumba on the team? Or maybe just where he is position-wise on the back end. You know,
well,
maybe he still is not feeling
in the
comfortable.
Top six. I didn't really get that from Brian.
Okay.
But
it sounded like, you know, still trying to figure some things out. And, you know, I think he's been okay.
Yeah.
Not enough for me to say, okay, you know, he's not going to come out of the lineup. But it was an interesting operation.
I think when he joined the Lightning, it was like gangbusters. And he really
probably
solidify the defense core. I think he's made a few more mistakes as the games have accumulated. But he's still in the top six. Like, he's going to be playing, and he's playing a lot. I mean, I'm looking at his ice time.
He's not coming
the other
out
night.
The
he played, well, he was minus three. He only played 13:58. So I'm not quite sure why his minutes were down in that game. But we had the Hayden Fleury situation too. Now the Lightning have a couple extra D as well.
Yeah.
And they dressed seven against Pittsburgh, and DeHaan was the eighth. I don't know what's going to be the status of Hayden Fleury for tomorrow's game.
Who played Chippy, by the way? Right? I mean,
he was very engaged. He and Bunting had something going most of the night. until Fleury collided with Steve Cazare.
And how about that? I mean, what?
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. The Cazare, I mean, they weren't giving you guys, it sounded like, you know,
we finally saw, I saw one after the game. Finally.
Cazare just didn't see.
No. And Fleury didn't see him.
Yeah. I mean, that was,
they were both looking back at the puck.
Jeez.
And they banged right into each other. And like, it's a really good thing that officials wear helmets. I mean, of course they're going to wear helmets. I mean, the players have to wear helmets, but if he was not wearing a helmet, you worry about, you know, something even more severe happening. Yeah, as it was, sure. I think based on what it sounded like, he may have been unconscious on the ice. He wasn't moving.
I mean, he looked like it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always tough to, as an athlete, to just kind of pick up where you left off. You know, especially if it's a teammate that gets hurt. You know, linesman, you could tell. Yeah. And it was nice gesture that both sides came off the ice and wanted.
Yes. It didn't affect the Lightning's push, though.
No.
Like, they basically picked up right where they left off. So the Duclair goal happened after that incident, after the collision. And I want to say, because it happened during the first, like, the whistle occurred for the collision. We were due to take the first TV timeout. So that means there were about 6.5 minutes played in the period. Duclair's goal came at 7:23.
Mm-hmm.
So within a minute of play resuming, the Lightning scored to make it 4-3. It didn't slow them down, but sometimes we do see that. And we'll check on Fleury's status for tomorrow.
And no Cirelli, but Hagel played. And we had some people asking those questions.
Cirelli, it sounds like it's precautionary. I mean, I saw him around, you know, in the 2 days since he got injured and left the game against Montreal. And I mean, this is certainly hearsay, but he looked fine. Like he wasn't, he didn't seem to be somebody who was distraught about having to deal with an injury that was going to keep him out for a while. So we'll see if he's able to return tomorrow against the Columbus team that, like, they've had some sneaky wins recently. They beat Colorado at home.
Yeah.
And who did they beat? They beat someone on Saturday. Who did they beat on Saturday? They beat Philly. That's right. They beat Philly 6-2.
Right. Good win.
And then they went to Carolina and got shut out.
Right, right. Jay says, very happy that they clinched a bit early. Good that Stamkos will get at least one more playoff chance. And Tampa was worried that his last year would be his last. Good fight back in Pittsburgh, hoping for good health to finish the season.
That's the most important thing, health to finish the season. And now the Lightning have clinched. We'll see what this means as it relates to Vasilevskiy's workload, understanding that Tompkins is still right now the backup. But the Lightning have no more back-to-backs.
Yep.
So their schedule is every other day. Right? Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Monday, Wednesday.
Basically.
To finish the season.
Basically, that's what it is. And he's right about the good health. And I never looked at Stamkos, you know, getting into the playoffs. Was this his last hurrah with Tampa Bay? Maybe because, one, I haven't thought too much about it. And probably bigger picture, I don't think it's going to happen where he's playing for another team. So maybe that's why I'm not getting nostalgic about, you know, his time here in Tampa. But, I mean, I can understand if a fan wants to think that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the contract hasn't been signed, so I understand. But would you agree that when you take a look at individual performances, whatever list you come up with, Dave, Steven Stamkos' production has to be one of them? I mean, did anybody anticipate? I mean, is he approaching 40 goals?
Yeah, 36.
Right? I mean, I know he, what, was it a couple years ago, hit 100 points? First time in his career, so it's not like he couldn't do it, but he is a couple of years older from that year he had 100 points. And you're dealing with the contract. If you kind of want to create a narrative where what he's doing right now is pretty impressive. And, you know, I gave you the reasons why, you know, Sidney Crosby scoring 40 goals at his age is still something that's pretty impressive. Stamkos isn't 37, but he's not 25 either.
No. So I want to ask Stamkos about this, and he does not shoot as much as Ovechkin. He doesn't. Like, you look at the year by year, Ovechkin always has more shots than Stamkos, even though they both play on the power play. And Ovechkin tends to stay out for the full 2 minutes. But Stamkos doesn't and hasn't throughout his career. But Stamkos tends to be selective. Understanding that. So he doesn't just shoot to shoot. He shoots to score. There's a difference. Having said that, when the volume of shots on goal and shot attempts for Stamkos goes up, so does his goal production. So does that mean that he likes the opportunities that he's getting, so he is shooting more, or he is backing off that kind of line of the sand about
this isn't
the best opportunity for me to shoot. I'm going to make a pass instead. Because let's remember, Greg, you look at the breakdown of his goals and assists. Like last year, he had 1,000 points and 500 goals, very close to one another. Right, those milestones hit. He's not a 1-to-1, but he has gotten assists as many as he has had goals. In fact, I think he has more assists than goals.
Is it fair to say, though, too, that Stamkos probably is playing with better players as well? And so if you don't have an open shot, you don't mind getting it to a header.
I don't think that's it, though, because he does it on the power play, and he's been playing with great players on the power play throughout his career. I just think that, I mean, I read you the numbers. He had 7 shots on net the other night. Now, he's not going to have 7 shots on net every night. But I think that his increased goal production over the last month, which has coincided with Duclair arriving, first he played on the line with Stamkos, and then Hagel moved down to that line. So that's been one kind of element. But the other element is he is shooting more. He is. And his shot, even though he is 34 years old and not the same player, to your point, that he was when he was 23, his shot is still one of the very best in the NHL and very difficult for goaltenders to stop.
Do you think he's found, and maybe I'm stating the obvious, but we talk about production not only on the power play, but recently all season long, we know we can play with Point and Kucherov, but do you think he's found a little bit of a home here with, you know, his line mates now when they are healthy and playing?
Well, if he's going to play with Cirelli and Hagel in the playoffs, that is going to be the shutdown line. Stamkos, to the best of my memory, has not really been in that role in a playoff run.
I was gonna say, has he ever been in that role?
Yeah. I mean, it's been Killorn in the last couple of years playing with Cirelli and Hagel. So we'll see what John Cooper thinks about that. The other element is that Duclair has been not consistently on the line with Stamkos, with Kucherov and Point. He was moved off. Then he was moved back on. Even in the Pittsburgh game, he was moved off, and then they put him back on. The Lightning were going 11 forward, so the forward lineup was fluid anyway because they didn't have Cirelli. But when Duclair scored to make it 4-3 Pittsburgh, he was playing with Kucherov and Point. So I think that's probably what you're looking at, understanding we may see changes between now and the end of the regular season. But if you were to ask me my opinion, I would say that to start a playoff series, yes, Duclair will be with Point and Kuch, and Stamkos will be on a quote-unquote checking line with Hagel and Cirelli, and they're going to see how it goes. Understanding the Lightning are going to be the road team in a playoff series, meaning they're going to start on the road, and they will not have the last change. They will not be able to dictate the matchups as easily as they will be able to dictate the matchups when they are the home team.
That is a good point, because you're not used to seeing Stammer in that shutdown role. Now, look, you can mix and match a little bit more once you have home ice. So maybe there are some things that John Cooper could do if he feels like having Stammer really play a hard 200-foot game consistently in the playoffs is something they want to stay away from. You know, Hagel and Cirelli are younger. They're probably a little more inclined to take on that role. Then again, you know, Stamkos has shown maybe the ability to adapt and to adjust. I haven't looked, partner, mostly at his metrics defensively and where he would rank. I've got to think they're relying heavily on Cirelli and Hagel to do a lot of the heavy lifting there. But I think what Stamkos could do on that line is give you another faceoff option.
Yes.
Who is generally somebody that could help you out from that perspective.
Well, and if it's not going to be Stamkos, because I think it is going to be Hagel and Cirelli, who else is going to be put on that line? I mean, there are other defensive forwards the Lightning could use, but mostly those guys have not played with Cirelli and Hagel.
Could you do a Nick Paul?
I mean, you could, but I think Nick Paul is well slotted as the third line center.
I would agree.
And when he's been playing with Chafee and Asimont,
they've been doing well.
They've been annoying for the other team.
Jammed that game.
I mean, look, probably the two best defensive forwards the Lightning have who really know how to defend and have a lot of experience doing this and doing it in high pressure situations in the playoffs are Luke Glendening and Tyler Mott.
Yeah.
But I would be very surprised if we see either Mott or Glendening, who's the fourth line center, playing with Cirelli and Hagel. So if that's the case, you're going to have to use somebody else. And maybe Stamkos is up for the challenge. This is going to be a new challenge for him. In this situation is what I'm talking about. Yes, he has played with those guys in the regular season. They've seen the opposition's top line. But in a playoff series, let's say it's Boston, Coop is going to try and get them out there against Pastrnak every chance he gets.
Well, and the other thing, too, that we need to discuss, does this determine 11-7, 12-6? You know, depending on line combinations, do you want that extra forward? Do you not want it? Because we have seen John Cooper. Is there another coach in the league? And again, I confess, I don't follow all of the teams closely in terms of what they do. I would say most are pretty traditional with 12-6. But is it fair to say John Cooper is one of the coaches that doesn't mind going to that 11-7 mode?
He doesn't, but I think the Lightning played some of their best hockey of the season post-deadline with the 12 forwards that we saw in the lineup before the injuries started happening.
That's
so
fair.
We'll monitor the Cirelli situation. We'll monitor the Tanner Janot situation. But what you had was Duclair, Point, Kucherov, Hagel, Cirelli, Stamkos. We talked about that. Paul, Asimont, Chafee, and Glendening, Mott, and Janot. That was one thing Brian mentioned early in the game on Saturday, which is because the Lightning went 11-7, Mott moved to center. And Paul was actually on the line with Stamkos and Hagel, and then they switched it back. In the third period, Paul was back with Chafee and Asimont, and we saw Sherry, who was in the lineup after the injury to Tanner Janot. Sherry was with Glendening and Mott. They put Glendening and Mott back together. Glendening and Mott play very well together, just like Hagel and Cirelli play very well together. Not coincidentally, they are paired on penalty kill. Glendening and Mott are a pair on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
Cirelli and Hagel are a pair on the penalty kill, unless one of them is in the box, which we've actually started seeing oddly with some regularity recently. Like Glendening has taken, I think, 3 or 4 minor penalties in the last few games, so they haven't had him available on the PK. And Hagel's been going to the box a little bit more regularly. They miss those guys. If you're going to kill a penalty, you want to have those four forwards available. So I think, as it relates to going 12-6 or 11-7, that was what worked really well for the Lightning when everyone was healthy. And assuming Cirelli and Janot return in time for the playoffs and there are no subsequent injuries at the forward position, I would not be surprised at all to see that that's your game one lineup and line combinations.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Mott. I think he gets overlooked, rightfully so, in many ways. Glendening, we've seen for the whole year. Mott's had some injuries. But when you take a look at Mott's performance and the fact that he's been in the playoffs the last few years and how teams covet him, I think, in his skill set, I actually think there's probably another level for him to get to in the playoffs that I'm intrigued seeing if that plays out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned that fourth line, I think he can provide not only that jam, but he's got a little, like, that whole line has a little bit of, you know, greasy goal syndrome that they can provide that I think is something when you take a look at the playoffs when that comes. I think Mott's somebody we haven't seen his best, and I think what we've seen so far this year has been pretty good. I don't know if you disagree or...
I disagree a little bit when you say we haven't seen his best. I think he's been very effective for the Lightning. I mean, you remember the play that happened? It was two plays, but it was on the same shift in the first period of the Montreal game. Gallagher got a lead pass and had a lane to the net from, he got the puck like at the bottom of the right faceoff circle. So he had a weird angle to the net. He was trying to get to the net and Mott flew back defensively and disrupted it. Gallagher never got a shot off. Later in the same shift, Mott makes that chip play on his backhand to AC Mott to spring the 2-on-1. AC Mott scores. So look, Mott hasn't gotten a ton of points. That was one example of a play in which he did get a point. But the relentlessness with which he plays and his commitment to playing good D, basically, and making sure that he's making the right play at the right time, I think has been noteworthy this year. So I don't know if he has, quote unquote, more to give, but I think what he's given the Lightning has been extremely valuable. He's got speed, too.
He does. I would agree with that. At Bolts Radio, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you certainly can. 11-7, we've discussed. We've talked about the fourth line, Stamkos. Anything else is fair game. If you want to break it all down with us, you can. And then, you know, partner, it's interesting. You kind of take a look at the Lightning schedule and, you know, ending on a high note if you can. And they're back on home ice tomorrow against the team. They're quite frankly, that's going to be an interesting one to see how things play out, because I don't know what to expect when it comes to, you know, the Lightning and Blue Jackets, because the Blue Jackets just aren't very good.
You don't want to give them hope. I think Carolina did a pretty good job of that yesterday. They kind of tamped them down early and got a lead and made it a game that the Blue Jackets were less inclined to play. Now, if they go up like they did against the Flyers, right? Hey, it's fun to play. And they jumped out to a lead and won going away. They have some younger players. They've had some injuries, so they've called up some younger players. So we'll see. Lightning have, in their five remaining games, they have three teams. I'll say Buffalo is in this mix now, even though it's not official yet. They have three teams that are going to miss the playoffs for sure. You have Washington battling for a playoff spot, and then you have a team, Toronto, that's in the playoffs but in a different situation. So we'll see how they handle it. But yeah, tomorrow they face a team that's well out of it.
And I think those are always the toughest games. We can talk about Pittsburgh going against a team that needs wins and needs points. I'd much rather play a game like that than a game like they're going to face tomorrow in Columbus, who, you know, we can throw out all the narratives about, you know, it's a team that's playing for jobs and they're going to play hard. And okay, that's fine. That's true. But human nature, it never fails us.
Yep.
You get into a situation like this, the guard is let down. There's no doubt about it. The question just becomes, does that let down, is it so significant it prevents the Lightning from picking up 2 points? That's how I look at it tomorrow.
Right.
And I don't know if people agree or disagree, but we can kind of go from there. This question comes from Matt. He wants to know, guys, do you think John Cooper gets a little more consideration for Coach of the Year this year?
Yes.
I would agree.
I don't think he's going to win, though. We talked about it. We only get 3 votes. And there's probably going to be a lot of votes for coaches who took teams that were out of the playoffs, well out of the playoffs last year, and improved a lot. And
would
there
you say
those teams this year.
Would you say most Coach of the Year awards go to that scenario?
Sometimes. I mean, Montgomery won it last year just with the team that won 65 games. Here's the thing. It's two components. First of all, it is a year-by-year award. It is not a lifetime achievement award, right? Like, past history beyond the season that just occurred doesn't matter. The second part is the votes are cast at the end of the regular season before the playoffs begin. So it is a regular season award, and it is for the regular season that just finished, and that's it. So John Cooper is probably the most acclaimed head coach in the NHL over the last decade. But year by year, it's not like the Lightning have been one of the top teams in the entire league, save for one regular season I'm talking about, save for 1 year,
right,
18-19, when Trotz won it because the Islanders had a bigger turnaround, basically, than the Lightning. Lightning were a good team prior to 18-19, got to the Eastern Conference Final, 162 in 18-19, and I want to say Coop finished second. But usually, yes, it's the coach of a team that had a big turnaround, or not in Coop's case, but the coach of a team that maybe finished near the top of the standings, coach that had to deal with difficult situations, obstacles, lots of injuries. Those are the coaches that tend to get the votes. But as we've talked about, if it were after the playoffs, we would see a much different vote.
For sure. Most likely going to the Stanley Cup winner, but sometimes not.
Probably.
It just kind of depends on how that all plays out. At Bolts Radio, if you want to get involved in the conversation. Yeah, the coach of the year, that is strictly based off of where do you have a team before the year begins? Where do they finish? And sometimes, maybe a lot of the times, it adds up to which one overachieves in your eyes, ends up getting the award.
To Matt's point, though, I think there are going to be some broadcasters who vote for Coop because the perception was the Lightning weren't going to be as good this year. And again, they made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So he had to do more coaching. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that, but he had to do more coaching because he had fewer horses in the stable that were like thoroughbreds.
Again, I wonder.
I think coaches have to coach no matter what their lineup looks like, but fair enough. I think he's going to get votes because that's the logic some guys or women are going to use.
Was he asked in Montreal about coaching the Olympics?
I think so.
Remember, he gave that answer.
And yeah.
He was pretty upfront and honest about it, about what a great honor that would be.
It would be. Sure.
You know, and
he was supposed to.
He was, right?
The COVID year, right?
Yep. You're right about that. So that's interesting. Well, something we'll keep an eye on as the season winds down. People are going to be giving their opinion a little bit more when it comes to awards. And the Lightning, I think, should be at the forefront and a lot of some of those individual awards as well. He's not going to win them, but you know, the play of Andrei Vasilevskiy, I think, is elevating. I think the goal that he gave up to Letang, unless he was screened, she felt like it might have been deflected.
Maybe. It would have been off a Lightning player, though, because Letang
got there. That one, I mean, I think there have been few of those goals, partner, over the last month where you looked at it and said he should have had it.
Yeah.
And if that one was deflected, then usually give the goaltender a bit of a pass. But, you know, I think that's not why they lost that game against Pittsburgh. But it was one of those long range shots where you look at it and say, oh, that's just typically we don't see that often happening with Vasi and where they are. Get a few more questions in if you want at Bolts Radio. Guys, any update on Mikhail Sergachev? This is coming from Dan.
I think he's trending toward, you know, getting back on the ice. I think he is on the ice, but it's going to be deep in the playoffs.
Yeah.
If the Lightning can go deep in the playoffs, that's what we've heard.
Right. Don't bank on him playing early. Bank on him maybe hopefully playing late, and hopefully the Lightning have a little more juice there.
And yes.
He comes back, and I think the depth of their back end is going to look pretty good from that perspective. Let's take one more before we sign off. This question comes from Randy. Guys, how do you think Tanner Janot's play has been this year? Certainly some injuries, but when he's played, I've liked what he's done.
I agree, and I particularly agree since he came back from the second long stint with whatever his injury was before he got into the fight with Ryan Reeves. I thought that fourth line with Glendening, Mott, and Janot was giving the Lightning some really good minutes.
I think when you talk about Tanner Janot and what he's done for this team, I think when he's healthy, showing a little bit more of the player they envisioned a couple of years ago when they acquired him. And I'm hoping once the playoffs begin, we even see a better Janot. But that's, you know, again, to be determined when it comes to that. All right, that's going to wrap up our show today. We appreciate you guys listening. Tomorrow, of course, we've got the game, the Lightning and Blue Jackets. And we'll have all of the coverage for you right here on these airwaves. But Dave and I will be in the setting noon to one tomorrow as well, talking about the game. And maybe have a guest sprinkled in.
Yes. Live show tomorrow. Game day.
Live show tomorrow. And I'll be at the arena. I'm going to come. Nice. I'll be there. I can't wait to get that book. Blind Squirrel. Make sure you check it out. Mish, we will talk to you tomorrow.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks to Steve Ersnick. Thanks to Austin Wright. I am Greg Linnelli. You've been listening to Power Lunch on Lightning Radio.